It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by Gordon Ridge.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
And now for a message of hope.
Ah, a message of hope, right on time.
Everything is garbage.
Oh, no.
You find something you care about, and it's taken from you. Your colleague, your dream job.
Your Rockets Game 6 win.
Your mango yogurt.
Woo!
Never love anything. That's the lesson.
And what other lessons have we learned? That the Rockets are incapable of closing out games against the Oklahoma City Thunder as they drop Game 6, 104-100. What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. So the Rockets have yet to show that they are able to close out games down the line. You know, those really gritty, awesome Rockets teams from the very beginning of the bubble against the Dallas Mavericks and against the Milwaukee Bucks. Remember those two games? You remember. I remember. Man, those were some fun teams to watch because they knew how to close out basketball games. And frankly, we haven't seen that in this series. The games that the Rockets have won, games 1, 2, and 5, all the home team games, unfortunately. I think that's funny that, you know, only the home team has won in these games that doesn't actually have home court advantage. But all of those wins came, you know, they were commanding wins. The Rockets went up, you know, substantially in those games and kind of coasted. And there was never any pressure. But when the pressure was dialed up to 11 in Game 3, in Game 4, and now in Game 6, the Rockets have screwed the pooch every single time. They have yet to rise to the occasion to answer the call when it happens, and that's concerning. Look, first things first, before I dive too much into anything, there are way too many thoughts that I have about this game rattling around and the ramifications surrounding it. And, you know, this series and everything going on now that the series between the Rockets and Thunder has been pushed to 7 games, which is what nobody wanted. This is now, it has now escaped my original prediction of Rockets in 6. Pretty much every terrible thing that could have happened at the end of games 3, 4, and now game 6 happened to push those games in OKC's favor. And now you've got a 7-game series on the line and all the pressure is on the Rockets. Nobody expected Oklahoma City to do this, to push the Rockets to the brink. And so, first things first, there's way too many thoughts going on, so I will just kind of hit on some of the main ones that I have, the first things that come to mind here in this media recap podcast, talk about the ending of the game, talk about James Harden, Russell Westbrook, you know, things like that. And then I'll circle back around and hit on, you know, some probably wider topics in Wednesday's podcast. But first things first, what happened there at the end? Just, you know, I'm as baffled as you probably are, you know, while watching this game, watching it all break down, you know, happen in real time, wondering just throughout the game, you know, Russell Westbrook went from having a really, honestly, a beautiful game back. Game 5, he looked great. You know, yes, the shot was a little off. The efficiency was a little, you know, subpar. But passing-wise, he looked like he was playing within the flow of the offense, was very much in control of himself, and just didn't look that way at all in this game. which is why I don't buy it when you know everybody on social media is clamoring saying that, you know, Russell Westbrook, his seven turnovers in this game, oh, it's rust. No, because he didn't look rusty. I mean, he looked rusty in game five, but I don't buy that those terrible passes were all rust. There were maybe two of those seven turnovers that you could attribute to rust because maybe the pass was just a little bit off. But largely, these were just bad passes, just telegraphed passes or just getting the ball stripped by Chris Paul, you know, in crunch time, things like that. Those are just unacceptable. It's unacceptable behavior. And then James Harden, too. Five turnovers. Just the turnovers were just backbreakers, man. Look, and here's one thing, right, is you can turn the ball over a little bit. Nobody's expecting you to be perfect. But 22 turnovers is just unacceptable levels of basketball. You can't win committing 22 turnovers. You can't. It's too many. If you are going to be the team that prides itself on forcing the opposing team to commit turnovers, and if you're going to allow yourself to get out-rebounded, you have to have the edge somewhere. And the Rockets gave up their edge by committing 22 turnovers and allowing 22 Thunder points off of those 22 turnovers. That's just not great. And the fact that they had turnovers down the stretch of this game, you know, in crunch time when it mattered most, that's the super painful part. Looking at the fact that they had how many turnovers was it? Three turnovers in the final 4 minutes. 4 minutes and some change. The Rockets only scored one basket over the final 4 minutes and 13 seconds of this game. That's just, you can't win. You cannot win playing that way. It was just an absolute meltdown at the end of the game. And I think that is in large part, and it's not any one person's fault. Here's the thing, is it's not exclusively Russell Westbrook's fault for throwing away, you know, the ball at the very end on the final possession. It's not exclusively James Harden's fault for not stepping up to the plate and being more commanding and being the star player, you know, demanding the basketball down the stretch of the game. It's not exclusively his fault. It's not exclusively Mike D'Antoni's fault for continuing to stick with Eric Gordon, who had an abysmal game, for sticking with Russell Westbrook, who also, after having a decent first half, you know, took a foul on Steven Adams to check himself out of the game, and maybe in a way kind of didn't look super great after coming back from that. Really should have been benched when the Rockets made their run to go up six. Russell Westbrook wasn't out there, and he checks back in, and then everything else just starts falling apart. Now, maybe that still happens, even if Russ doesn't check back in. Maybe Mike D'Antoni leaves Russ on the bench, rides, you know, the unit that he has out there on the court, and things were, you know, maybe things still devolve and still go to hell with Chris Paul drilling back-to-back three-pointers. You know, maybe that still happens. So it's not exclusively any one person's fault, but it just feels like a bunch of things went wrong for the Rockets, and it's really tough to pinpoint any areas that you can even take a, you know, look at and say, oh, well, there's a silver lining. There's one, is Robert Covington. And I will mention him in segment three. I want to end on a decent note. So I will just leave you with that really quickly before we hit this first break. Robert Covington had a great game. He struggled with Chris Paul guarding him one-on-one, but you're not going to, nobody expects you to guard the best players on the court one-on-one. You know, Lou Dort isn't expected to guard James Harden one-on-one. He guards him as good as he can one-on-one, and they funnel him into another Thunder player. Expecting Robert Covington to stick on Chris Paul one-on-one without any help defense is ridiculous. So, you know, Robert Covington needs to be able to, you know, choke up a little bit more on Chris Paul to force him to drive, and there needs to be better help defense, and you make Chris Paul get rid of the basketball and make somebody else make a shot, make somebody else beat you. So I don't want to beat up on Robert Covington too much for getting burnt by Chris Paul in crunch time because, hey, the rest of his game was flawless. And I'll give him more daps later on in segment three. But really quickly, let me drop in a quick word from our friends over at rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is basically impossible to stock all the parts that you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why would you want to endure the often pointless and sometimes intimidating questioning like, what model is your car? Is it an LX, an EX? All these questions being thrown at you left and right when you can just pull out your phone, go on your laptop, your computer, your tablet, whatever, and go to rockauto.com. They have everything that you need, from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even brand new carpet. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, you can get everything that you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the exact same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why would you want to spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure to write "Locked On." This is the important part. Do me a favor. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And we're back at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, discussing the Rockets' Game 6 collapse at the hands of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, right after the game, Chris Paul, in his post-game interview, you know, said, look, some people are built for the moment. Some people are, you know, some people shy away from, you know, those crunch time moments, and other people are built for this for these moments. And I absolutely think that was a shot at James Harden. Without a doubt in my mind. And this is something that I questioned at the end of game 4, and his mentality, James Harden's mentality. So I'm talking James Harden right now. His mentality at the end of close games, when the game is really on the line, there have been very few times that I've felt that James Harden has been in control of a game at the end of, you know, at the end of regulation or at the end of an overtime, whatever, as the final buzzer draws, whenever that may be. Something about it, it just, and you know, the common terminology for it is the, whatever the it factor is, you know, who has it and who doesn't have it. And I'm not all the way sold on saying that James Harden doesn't have it. But man, you got to expect more out of him in this. In the final 4.5 minutes, James Harden only took 2 shot attempts. At 3 minutes and 11 seconds left in the third quarter, James Harden had 26 points. He finished the game with 32. He only scored 6 points over those final 15 minutes and 11 seconds. Now, he didn't play that entire 15-11, but only 6 points the rest of the way? You're supposed to be the best player on the court, and he is the best player on the court. Well, let me take that back. He's the most talented player on the court. Chris Paul was undoubtedly the best player on the court in this game. And that's just without a doubt. Chris Paul took over this game the way that James Harden needed to take over this game down the stretch. I don't care how tired you are. I don't care if you're trying to get Russell Westbrook involved. This is your team. This is your moment. And he needed to be the guy to step up. I could have lived with a missed James Harden three-pointer on that final possession of the game, with him trying to go for the win. I could have even lived with a missed, you know, a botched James Harden drive. I could have even lived with a James Harden drive that led to a kickout pass exactly like Russell Westbrook's, to the middle of nowhere, a turnover, because the ball's supposed to be in your best player's hands down the line. And afterwards, they said, you know, Mike D'Antoni said that the play was drawn up and it was supposed to be so that they could get a switch, and Russ was supposed to drive the ball in and then kick it back to James Harden, and then that read didn't happen because Chris Paul was in the wrong spot on the court. Chris Paul kind of just flew in there in a flurry to muck things up, and it looked like that's what forced Russell Westbrook to then try and kick the ball out to Robert Covington. Because the way that it looked is, as after rewatching the play multiple times over, it looked like as Russ was making that last minute drive to try and, you know, to try and distract the defense, that Robert was getting ready to come over and screen for James Harden, and then Harden would cut back towards the right wing, and then Russ was going to make that kickout pass. That's what I think was supposed to happen. But Chris Paul, being in the middle of that play, mucked it all up. It forced Russ to kind of jump and panic midair and pick up his dribble. And so he immediately looked to kick the ball back out to Robert Covington. Because you can see there's a split second where Rocco kind of takes this jab left towards James Harden. And Harden starts moving towards Robert like they're about to, you know, execute a screen. And it just, you know, then he dives back towards the loose ball that Russ kind of sends sailing out of bounds. So regardless of that, why? At that point in the game, 10, 12 seconds left in the game, whatever it was for the final possession, why? Why does Mike D'Antoni feel the need to draw something up like that? Why does James Harden feel the need to have a play like that drawn up? At that point in the game, you're the most talented player on the court. You're supposed to be the best player on the court. You're a point guard. You're a natural ball handler. You walk the ball up every other possession. Why not just inbound the ball to James Harden and let him walk it up and give him 10 seconds, just tell everybody else to clear out? Or even better yet, in that position, why would you not make the substitution to put in Ben McLemore? Why not trust one of your bench guys, trust somebody who's a shooter? Put in your best three-point shooters. Because at that point, Russ is a detriment to have out there for spacing. And that's not a shot at Russ. That's coaching. That's X's and O's. It's the same reason why I don't understand why Mike D'Antoni wouldn't sub in Jeff Green to help, you know, secure the rebound there at the very tail end of regulation. I've never understood Mike D'Antoni's stubbornness when it comes to the in-game chess match of coaching. Just don't get it. Put in Tyson Chandler to secure a rebound. Who cares? I mean, you don't actually need him in there for the final possession. You can take another timeout. You can do whatever you need to do to draw up a play. But seriously, in that moment, James Harden's the best player, and for him to have not even touched the ball in that final possession, even if the play was supposed to be drawn up to get him the ball, he's the best player. Just start him with the ball. And I could have lived with any outcome from that, not the way that it ended with Russell Westbrook. And that's not a shot at Russ. It really isn't. This is James Harden's team. That shot goes to James Harden. And on a night especially where Russ was struggling, he goes from game five committing zero turnovers and dishing out seven assists to game six with only three assists and seven turnovers. So I'm not buying it being a rust factor. I think it was just bad passes, just bad reads, bad passes. And down the stretch of the game, just poor execution. I mentioned, you know, James Harden only had two, and I said he only had two shot attempts at the tail end of the game. Technically, he had three because he had the last second heave to try and, you know, land a three with, you know, 3 seconds left on the clock after the game was pretty much out of reach. So I'm really only counting it as two shot attempts. But the Rockets as a whole only had six shot attempts in the final 4 minutes and 13 seconds of the game. Russ was the only one that hit one of them. It was a layup. So, and then, you know, a couple James Harden threes, the Russ air ball, the missed layup, and then the Eric Gordon missed three-pointer. But that's just, it's just bad execution offensively. The turnovers were killers. I mentioned early on in the game that live ball turnovers are backbreakers. They really are. You can commit some turnovers, especially if they're dead ball turnovers. If a ball sails out of bounds, that's fine. It gives the Rockets a chance to set up their half court defense, and their defense in this game was actually pretty good for the most part. You know, holding the Thunder to 104 points, they just didn't execute offensively enough, and they shot themselves in the foot with the turnovers. But it's the live ball turnovers that are killers, because those are the ones, the live ball turnovers, where you're giving up chances for the Thunder to get in transition, to push the pace. You allow, you know, guys like Dennis Schroeder to get out there and run in the open floor, and that's when you're not doing yourself any favors, because then your defense doesn't get a chance to come back and get set, and so many bad things can happen off of live ball turnovers. So I'm utterly disappointed with James Harden down the stretch of this game, and I'm still frustrated with Russell Westbrook, but less so than I am with James Harden. Because it doesn't matter that he was subbed back in a couple minutes sooner than he should have been. This is his moment. This was his moment to close out a team, to have a chance to have that closeout game. And he did it in game five. He was the driving force in game five until the offensive explosion in the third quarter, and then they coasted a victory. But when the going gets tough, when the game is on the line, the tail end, he gets spacey. Whether it's bad passes, whether it's just floating away from the ball with seemingly no desire to be involved in the offense at the tail end of the game, whatever it is, it's frustrating. And we watched the same game, so I'm sure you're seeing it out there, watching James Harden not pressuring for the basketball. When in other moments, other stars of this league, LeBron James, Giannis, Kawhi, Kevin Durant, when he's healthy, Steph, when do we see those guys shy away from the big moment? The ball is either in their hand, the ball is in their hands, or a play is designed to get the ball in their hands successfully, I will say, for those big moments. But more often than not, it's just you give the best player the ball and you just get out of the way. And I cannot wrap my head around why that was not the play at the end of this game. So final segment coming up here in just a moment, wrapping up just immediate post-game reaction thoughts. And I promise not to be as doom and gloom in this final segment. And we'll get there in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, where I promise not to be as doom and gloom in this final segment. And there's a good reason for that. And let me lay it out first. Is while I'm definitely not cautiously optimistic for Game 7. Look, being completely up front, Oklahoma City has all the momentum headed into Game 7. And I think that at this point, OKC is probably the favorite to win the series. I'm just being completely up front. That being said, the Rockets still have the best player in this series, by far, in James Harden. It's just whether or not he's up to the challenge of being the best player. Because right now, he's been good. He's been good. He's been even borderline great. But he hasn't been great when it matters. And that's in the crunch time of these games. You know, he was the driving force in Game 5, and he poured in those 20 first half points, and he kept the Rockets afloat, gave them a three-point lead headed into halftime. Game 5 and Game 6 felt eerily similar. The Rockets carried a three-point lead into halftime in both of those games. The third quarters played out a little bit differently, and specifically in this Game 6, the Rockets actually responded really well. After being down, you know, the Thunder go on their 16-3 run, and after being down, the Rockets go on a 10-3 run themselves to give themselves some cushion and to kind of take control of this game. And it looked like they were really going to dig deep and pull out this win, but as they entered crunch time, things started to unravel again. And I don't know if it's a mental issue, I don't know if it's coaching, I don't know what it is, but as the crunch time shows up, as they get down to the wire in these games, something about James Harden seems off. But that being said, he is still the best player in this series. And if he can work past whatever that mental block is, because it's not like we haven't seen him be successful at the end of games before. It's not like we haven't seen him drain amazing game winners. Think back to the incredible game winner in overtime at Golden State over the outstretched hands of Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. You know, on his unguardable tour campaign. Imagine that, right? It's not like we haven't seen incredible, miraculous moments from James Harden. It's not like he's not capable of rising to the occasion. He just hasn't in this series. And he hasn't three times now in a row. That's why it hurts so much, because we know that he's capable of doing it. James Harden is easily one of the best players in the NBA. The most unguardable offensive player in the NBA. And yet the most unguardable offensive player in the NBA needs a play drawn up for him at the end of regulation just to try and get his patented step back three in there? I don't think so. I don't really buy that. I don't know why that's a necessity. I think they can win Game 7. I think they can. They have the talent. And in each of these losses, Game 3, Game 4, and Game 6, at no point did any of those games feel like the Thunder just flat out played better than the Rockets. for the entire game. And in a way, some of those losses might have felt better had the Thunder just completely worked over the Rockets. No, it just came down to the final few minutes of each game where the Thunder and Chris Paul specifically worked them over in crunch time. And I know deep down that James Harden is just as capable of Chris Paul of being masterful and being talented and running a lethal offense, a productive offense in crunch time. The defense hasn't really been an issue. Yeah, Robert Covington got a little bit burned by Chris Paul in this game. But that's a scheming thing. Robert Covington, if they're gonna be content to switch Roko onto Chris Paul, then Roko needs to be able to choke up on Chris Paul a little bit and be ready, and somebody else needs to be ready to help on the drive. Because let's face it, Chris Paul's not going to really be able to get all the way to the rim. He's not that explosive. It takes a really clean crossover on Robert Covington for Chris Paul to beat him off the dribble. And even then, he only barely beat Robert Covington off the dribble, and PJ Tucker was right there. And lucky for Chris Paul, Roko decided to reach in and foul. Otherwise, PJ Tucker had Chris Paul stopped. And then somebody else was going to rotate over to deal with Steven Adams. So you beat Chris Paul, you stop Chris Paul, I should say, by having better help defense. You cannot expect Robert Covington to be out there on an island by himself against Chris Paul and expect him to survive. And we could be talking, we could be speaking completely differently had Chris Paul not iced two back-to-back three-pointers to tie it up at 98 in this game. Those were two of the most clutch three-pointers that I've ever seen, legitimately, over the outstretched arms of Robert Covington. You know, how much more clutch can you get? Tip your cap to CP3, because he showed up and showed out in the final minutes of this game. But I think I do think that the Rockets have the talent to beat this OKC team. Because again, it hasn't been, oh, OKC is just flat out outplaying the Rockets. No, it's been they're playing because they're competitive and these games have been tight and close in the wins for OKC because the Rockets have been shooting themselves in the foot consistently. Down the stretch of games 3 and 4, down the stretch of this one, they're turning the ball over. They're not getting the right shot opportunities. They are just completely baffled down the stretch of these games. And that is not OKC beating you. That is Houston shooting themselves in the foot. And that's why I still have confidence that game 7 could really go either way. I haven't resigned myself to Houston losing the series. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they're the more talented team. And I think they've just not been playing as the more disciplined squad. And that starts with coaching. That starts at the top with Mike D'Antoni. That starts with making sure he's got the right guys out there, trusting the guys who get you the lead in the first place. If Russell Westbrook looks like he's having a bad night, if he's detrimental to the team, don't put him back out on the court. I don't care if he makes $38 million. Don't put him out there. The rotations just in general in this game, playing Ben McLemore for just 4 minutes, again, didn't get a single shot attempt in his 4 minutes. Austin Rivers with only 12 minutes, but defensively out there, he looked pretty good against some of the quicker guards, was very productive out there, had a really nice steal. Daniel House Jr. played 30 minutes, hit 2 of 6 from behind the arc, 5 of 9 overall, had 12 points, had a couple rebounds, had 3 steals. Daniel House was incredible on the defensive end in this one, and honestly, House probably should have been out there instead of Russell Westbrook at the end of the game. He really should have been. Because defensively, he would have been a better match. He would have given some more length. Daniel House, you know, would have been better to have out there to potentially, you know, switch on to Chris Paul. But if they're hunting for the Roko switch, then guess what? Daniel House Jr. is another guy with some length, you know, with some defensive IQ out there to help kind of muck up passing lanes, and has been great about rotating on defense and being a help side defender. So having Daniel House Jr. out there in place of Russell Westbrook probably would have helped for some of those defensive possessions down the stretch. But James Harden, it's his at the end of the day, it's his team, right? He has to be the guy to take over a game at the end. He cannot be this passive version that we've seen in these 3 losses, which is exactly what we've seen. We've seen him pass up a shot opportunity after shot opportunity down the stretch of these games. And whether that's because he's gassed or he just doesn't have it, or Lu Dort is bothering him, or the OKC defense as a whole is bothering him, whatever it may be, it's enough. It needs to stop. And I would rather go down with James Harden swinging than anybody else swinging. Because then at that point, you just say, all right, he just didn't have it. But in this, watching this loss play out the way that it did, especially on that final possession, Russell Westbrook just chucking the ball out of bounds, that hurts. Especially when it was preceded by an air ball, a turnover, a missed layup, you know, all of these different opportunities down the stretch just squandered. And again, it's not any one person's fault. It's not strictly on Russell Westbrook. It's not strictly on James Harden. It's not strictly on Eric Gordon, whose production was just abysmal. 3 of 12 shooting, 1 of 6 from behind the arc, 4 turnovers, a team worst minus 10 in his 35 minutes out there on the court. His defense was good. I'll give him that. But at that point, he's not even Lou Dort, because Lou Dort's defense is better than Eric Gordon's. And right now they're shooting roughly the same from behind the arc. So at this point, I'd rather have Lou Dort on the Rockets, because Eric Gordon is, as I said earlier in the evening, he's playing like Eric Dorton right now. That's what he's shooting like. And if that continues, that's going to be really hard to overcome in Game 7. Either Russell Westbrook has to show up and be the better version of himself. He cannot be worst Brook. He has to be best Brook. Or the role players really need to step up like they did in some of the earlier games in this series. Because off the bench, Jeff Green with just 3 points, only 1 of 5 three-point shooting. Daniel House did have 12 points, but you got nothing out of Austin Rivers in his 12 minutes. Nothing from Ben McLemore, not even a shot attempt from Ben McLemore. Literally just zeros across the line for Ben McLemore in 4 minutes of action. 15 of 44 shooting from behind the arc as a team for 34.1%. Not terrible. Not great. You'd want that number up a little bit more before you get into the territory of Rockets being almost unbeatable. 20 fast break points for the Rockets, 46 points in the paint. They outscored the Thunder in the paint. They were plus 14. They were also a plus 9 from behind the arc. The Thunder, however, were a plus 7 from the free throw line. And that's kind of the game right there. Rockets with just 9 of 12 free throw shooting, Thunder with 16 of 18 free throw shooting. And the refereeing, you know, at times it felt a lot better in the second half. I'll give them that. But in the first half, it just felt, you know, again, a lot of touch fouls going OKC's way and a lot of contact being missed on some of the Houston drives. But I am not for 1 second trying to blame the refs for this one. I'm sorry. The Rockets lost this game 100% on their own. But Robert Covington, I did mention I would talk about him for a minute. Robert Covington had himself a great game. 18 points, 7 of 11 shooting, 4 of 6 from behind the arc, 5 boards, 5 steals, 3 blocks, was a one-man wrecking crew defensively. And again, I've talked already at length about his one-on-one possessions against Chris Paul. It's not fair to expect anybody to guard Chris Paul one-on-one, you know, without being able to, you know, again, choke up on the perimeter a little bit and force him to drive. You have to force Chris Paul to drive. If you back off of him and let him get those three-point shots off, it's game over. So you force him inside and force him to drive. That's the way you beat him. But apart from those possessions, Robert Covington was everywhere defensively. He was in passing lanes. He was switching. He was, you know, covering multiple people on multiple possessions. He was blocking shots at the rim. He did everything and then some defensively to keep the Rockets in this game. And he showed up with his three-point shot when a lot of other people didn't. Again, Eric Gordon, 1 of 6. James Harden, 3 of 11. Russell Westbrook, actually 1 of 2. But just all around a really rough night for the Rockets. And now you whirl into Game 7. And we'll do a preview pod before Game 7. And I'll look at some of the advanced numbers from this and kind of focus in on some other areas rather than just the narrative and the feel behind James Harden and Russell Westbrook in the tail end of this game. But this is more just the immediate reaction of this game. I hope that the introduction to this pod gave you a bit of a chuckle, a bit of a reprieve, because trust me, I'm right there with you with the emotions felt after this game. I had to just chill for a minute after the loss. I had to just relax and try to clear my head a bit before I sat down and recorded this podcast. So we'll get one more episode in before Game 7 to decide how this series plays out and whether or not the Rockets move on to round 2 to face the LA Lakers, or whether they face an offseason and get sent packing out of the bubble a lot earlier than we would have hoped for. But for today's episode, That's going to do it. So as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.